So essentially, as you know, we spent a lot of time talking about Dinim D'Rabbanan as they affect Kol Torah Kula, and as they affect particularly issues of Sukkos. And one of the prime examples that kept coming up was the issue that really came out of our Masechta most directly, you know, the question of if one does a mitzvah in violation of rabbinic standards, if one does a Torah mitzvah, does the mitzvah count for anything? And that was introduced into our Masechta and Daf Gimel through a discussion about Sukkah specifically. But practically speaking, it most often comes up in the context of lulav or shofar or the like, because the most apparent example of this question is, we know that we're not allowed to take a lulav or blow a shofar on Shabbos when Sukkos falls out on those days. Sukkos always falls out on some Shabbos, but even when the first day of Sukkos falls out on Shabbos, and lulav is an obligation in Torah, we don't take a lulav. And the question then becomes, if one does, so does one fulfill any mitzvah at all? The question of, does one make a shechianu the next day when he does it legitimately for the first time? Issues like that were discussed at some length. But what we want to do now, I'm aiming probably for today and tomorrow, is discuss the question of that gezeira per se. And there's a lot to discuss that connects to this. There are many reasons why we should talk about this. One is because, again, it is a major sukkah topic. It affects hilchos lulav in a big way. It's the theme of the fourth parak, as you see, the opening mission of the fourth parak, which clearly we're not really up to yet, but that's a part of what we mentioned that we'll be jumping around a little bit. But the first mission of the fourth parak takes off from that point, from establishing that Shabbos is an issue for lulav, and we have to figure out just why. So it's a major sukkah topic. It's also just filling in what we started by referencing that idea so many times. But I think it's also valuable to talk about this because it helps us to understand a little bit the nature of the gezeros of Chazal and what exactly is behind some of the thinking that goes into it. So it's worth, just for that reason alone, exploring this particular gezeira in some detail. So what we'll try to do, I think today and tomorrow, is get a little bit of a sense of what can be said about this. So as is often the pattern, especially when we start a sugya on a Tuesday, it's a short day, short seder, short cheer. How far did anyone get as far as the Maamar Kamos? Rambam. Well, all the Rambams? Or, some of them, okay, because they alternated, so if one's true. All right, so whatever it is, that anyone finished the whole sheet, right? Right, okay, so in any event, there's a lot more we could be putting on. I'll add some for tomorrow, but just today get introduced to the sugya a little bit and lay out some questions. I know a number of you have some questions about this gezeira, and I encourage you to save them in public because that's going to be the first part of our discussion, trying to figure out what's a little bit surprising about this gezeira, maybe what's a lot surprising about this gezeira. And I think, as is often the case, we'll probably get the questions out today. We'll probably get the foundation built today of what we need to figure out about this. And then hopefully tomorrow we'll be able to get a little more clarity, and by then you'll have seen some more makaros and we'll be able to put it in some context. Okay, so let's start with that. So we find a number of places in Shas that there is a gezeira that certain mitzvos are not performed on Shabbos, even though these are mitzvos which do not, on the surface, involve any malacha. And most relevant to our Masechta is lulav, and the Mishnah tips us off in Mebeis and Mebeis that there is a issue with lulav on Shabbos, because the Mishnah has this whole presentation here counting which days we do which mitzvos, and the first line is lulav v'arava shisha v'shiva. So we're not going to do lulav and arava every day of Sukkos. It's going to be affected by Shabbos's impact, and we're going to have to figure out how. It's what the Mishnah talks about in greater detail, what the Gemara talks about in greater detail. It's a big theme. So again, you see that there is something here that is very front and center, because yeah, there's an organizing device here just in terms of counting days, but right when you jump into how Lulav and Arava took place, Bezman HaMikdash and beyond, the first thing you're told is that it depends what day of the week it is, that it was affected by whether it's Shabbos or not. So the Gemara asks, what's the issue? What's the problem with taking a Lulav on Shabbos? Tilt Baalma, that it just involves carrying something, and should that override Shabbos? Now, the language already of Lidchi Shabbos is already interesting, because Lidchi would be a language for saying we override Shabbos, but the question's premise is really we don't even need to override Shabbos, that it shouldn't be a problem for Shabbos. The Rashi says, Tilt Baalma, Ein Bo Tzad Isser, Ella K'metal Tel Eitzin. And so as far as Torah law is concerned, there's no Isser at all. You're just like moving wood. And since we're talking about a mitzvah min HaTorah, and the Beis HaMikdash, all 7 days a mitzvah min HaTorah, lama asruha, so why should they prohibit it? Mas yag l'Torah matzupa. So the language is a little difficult to read. You have to figure out what's going on, because Rashi has a number of premises packed into here. And so first to establishing that there doesn't seem to be any Torah prohibition. So again, the language of the Gemara of Lidchi Shabbos requires a little bit of explanation, because you don't say, let's be Doche Shabbos and have Kiddush the Shabbos. We said it's not a problem for Shabbos. So what's the language of Lidchi? Is something interesting? Okay, but that's maybe not something we can focus on too much. But what's the problem, essentially? So what Rashi is saying, that there doesn't seem to be any Torah issue. And there does seem to be a Torah mitzvah. If you're talking in the Beis HaMikdash, so every day of Sukkot there is a Torah obligation to take the lulav. So what's the problem? What's the siag that they saw that they had to impose here? So then the Gemara continues. What's the issue? Gezeira. It's a gezeira. Shema yitlenu biyado v'yelech etzol baki lumod. Maybe you're going to have some kind of question, and you're going to need to go to an expert to learn. So what are you going to need to learn? So here Rashi says, Nanuo o brachaso. So there's a lot that's interesting about that Rashi already. What could you pick up on about that Rashi? Right, well, first of all, neither of these are the mitzvah, right? The mitzvah of lulav is just picking it up, which is not so complicated for most of us. Of course, you could do it upside down, which would invalidate it, I guess, but basically, it's not so complicated. So, it's interesting, the fact that Rashi tells us that that's not what the question is going to revolve around could mean a couple things. It could mean that Rashi just needs to find something that's more complicated than picking it up, because this is otherwise pretty straightforward. Or maybe there's another reason why Rashi is focusing on this. Adi?
Doesn't seem to be focusing on the mitzvah, so it would be a catch-22 if it was talking about the mitzvah, but it did brought it to the rabbi, he would have
okay.
Right, that's you have to assume that it's something beyond.
Maybe. That's an interesting component. That might be true. Theoretically, you could bring it upside down to the Baki. That's a possibility. Or it's another interesting question. If you brought it there without any kavana, would you be Yotze? Those are two issues which you could explore. I mean, we observed Sukkot recently, so we remember that when we have this quandary, that when we pick up the lulav, we don't want to be Yotze right away, because we want to make the bracha first, and we don't want to make the bracha before picking it up, because we want it to be immediately before the lulav. So therefore, we need to come up with a strategy to pick up the lulav and not be yotze. So the Rishonim have a number of strategies, one of which is negative kavana, that God willing is a sugya we'll be able to discuss at some length. But the approach that we adopt nowadays is to hold it upside down. So theoretically, you could have a way of either of those approaches, a way of getting the question answered before your yotzei. But maybe there's something else here just to keep in mind. Why else might Rashi focus on two things here which are not the mitzvah itself? Yes, Harrison?
If we're talking about someone who doesn't know, maybe they just don't know what the Iker mitzvah is.
Maybe.
Like,
maybe it's just reflecting his own lack of knowledge, so therefore we're throwing into that also that he doesn't know what to even ask about. A little less likely, but, you know, it could be. Yes, sir?
Maybe if he was actually going for the mitzvah,
mm-hmm.
then it wouldn't be an issue because it's part and parcel of
the Okay. Going. So that's something that we have to figure out. Right? Is it perhaps the case, and this is something to keep your eyes out for, might it perhaps be the case that we're less concerned when the actual mitzvah itself is the subject? And that maybe it's particularly that it's something somewhat ancillary to the mitzvah that might be an issue here. Maybe that's it. Is Rashi saying that deliberately? We'll have to see. But we'll see that that's a little bit of a discussion. Yes, sir.
I'm sorry, just to roll with that, if we're going to say that the mitzvah isn't necessarily the central issue, then what would be otherwise?
Something secondary, like the Nuim or the Bracha. Right, to say that you might go there to learn the Bracha is just interesting. We'll have to see, is it significant? But it could be that maybe there is a deliberate focusing here on things which are not the mitzvah itself. Hi.
Hi.
Tell me your name.
Danielle.
Hi, Danielle. Yes.
Is it possible, assuming that the fact that it wasn't part of the central mitzvah is a key factor, would that apply to the shofar?
Oh, so that's also something we have to figure out. And what does the Rambam say? You saw the Rambam about shofar? Does the Rambam say something interesting in terms of what you're trying to do when it comes to shofar? Anyone see the rest of the Rambams are interspersed? Did anyone see the Rambam about shofar? So the Rambam, don't have the whole one, but the Rambam has an interesting nuance there. That when it comes to shofar, he interprets it that maybe the bakhti is going to blow the shofar for you. Demote to you. That's interesting. That's something we'll have to figure out if that's deliberate. Okay, so far we have to see how it applies to shofar, how it applies to lulav. But in any event, so here the Gemara says we're worried that you're going to have a question for a bucky. And what are you going to do? V'yavirenu arba amos b'shus harabim. You're going to come to carry it. V'hainu time of the shofar. V'hainu time of the Megillah. So we're worried that you're going to come and carry, and this is the same reason why we have a issue with shofar on Shabbos, and why also we don't read the Megillah on Shabbos. And then just to continue the theme a little bit, so to skip a little bit to Mem Gimel Amud Beis, so the Gemara adds a little more to this. Arava Shiva Ketzad. So what's the story with Arava? So Arava b'shvi my time medachi Shabbos. So apparently Arava gets more time than Lulav does, because Lulav only gets a sixth out of the 7 days, but Arava gets seven. So why is Arava docha Shabbos? Amar Rabbi Yochanan kidei lafarisuma shehimena Torah. So here Rashi says lafisha einu mefurashes mena Torah behedju. So because it's not explicit in the Torah. So Shavka Laravka Lemitcha Shabbos Chad Yoma Kedelafaris Meshmina Tarihi. So we want to make a picture, we want to make an announcement here, so we allow it to be Docha Shabbos for that purpose. So Lulav Gzeira Mishum Deraba. Now when it comes to Lulav, says the Gemara, it's different because So ihachi lulav nami litchu kedel faris mishmina Torah. Right, so lulav also is mina Torah. So why don't we say the same story by lulav? So says the Gemara, lulav gzeir mishum deraba. This gzeir deraba is how we refer to this gzeir of carrying. So lulav has that issue. So ihachi, if you're going to be gozer on lulav, so arava nami nigzor. So let's also make a gzeir on arava. Arava shluchei bezdin maisulav. Lulav l'chol maser. So when it comes to lulav, lulav is in the hands of everybody, and therefore, apparently, we are more concerned. So this is important because this gives us a little bit more background as to what kinds of considerations we are factoring in. But one thing we see right away is that there are a lot of questions that can be asked. And some of you had some questions. Again, now is a good time to bring them forward. And some of the questions were mentioned in the Rishonim. So what are some of the surprising aspects of this Gezeira in this context, in the Shofar context? Yes?
When it seems that the Gezeira is particularly applicable to certain people.
Okay, so that's one thing. That's less of a question and more of an important observation. Right, so that's worth mentioning now also, right? What kind of building blocks do we have here? So we see that there are some people we're afraid of more and less. And here, from our Gemara, it just tells us that it's a question of whether it's the masses or not, that if everybody has to deal with this mitzvah, there's a greater concern. While if it's something that's given over only to certain specific individuals, we're less worried. Yes, what else?
Could it also be that we look at lulav as like a kind of a not simple mitzvah, but something that like, you know, would be, if there was an issue, like, I don't know, phrase it, but if there's something wrong with your lulav, it might be something that like the rabbi wouldn't be able to help with anyway. So as in, if you go to, you know, there's a suffix that you're going to bring the lulav, which is ordinarily something very, you know, a simple mitzvah that you can kind of check off. So the fact that if there is something wrong with it, you bringing it to a rabbi might just not be effective. Like, you're going to end up carrying something that was muksa because it's an invalid lulav.
So, let me understand your point. You're saying that because, well, the invalid lulav is a topic that just got introduced just now in the end of your question, which is itself interesting, right? Because speaking as somewhat of a rabbi, so what kind of questions do I get asked when it's not Shabbos and people are taking a lulav? Right? Very few people are coming over to ask about the bracha, and not even about the nanuim, which are a little more choreographically challenging. But people are usually asking that something came up with the lulav, right? That maybe it broke a little bit, or maybe something looks wrong, and they want to know if the lulav itself is still good. So it's interesting that you would think might be the question. If they want to know, especially coming here where this is placed, after several lots of telling you all the different nuances that could go wrong with your lulav, and all the very, very tricky details that are necessary to understand. So now here Rashi is telling us, oh, what kind of question might you come up with? Yeah, how do I do the nuim? What bracha do I make? Which is interesting. But is that part of your question?
Yeah, sure. It's just that idea that it's a suffix whether going to the rabbi is going to do anything. As in, let's just say you were to determine that the lulav is puzzle, right? So then you've just carried a puzzle lulav to someone's house that was in Rosh Hashanah Rabin, and so you're not getting credit for the mitzvah, and you've done something that was, and you like, you know, Shabbos.
So that actually sounds like a good reason to make this gezeira. So your question is, why does the Gemara not say it?
That could be something that could be behind the gezeira.
Oh, okay, so that would be great. Your question, then, why does the Gemara not say all of that? Right? I think you're right, that's a much more likely kind of problem. Right? That maybe somebody will have a questionable lulav, and they're going to want to check it out. And the act of checking it out is going to involve carrying for no purpose. So they bring the lulav to somebody who tells them it's no good. So they just carried this lulav out there in public for no reason. So that's a perhaps more present reason to make gezeira than what we see here. And it's interesting, if you want to compare this to something, so in this whole category of Akiras Dabar Min HaTorah, so we mentioned last week that one of the instances of Akiras Dabar Min HaTorah is the Gemara Menacha says that by Torah law, you should put tzitzis on a garment even if that creates shatnez. But the rabbi said not to. And the Gemara gives a number of reasons why. And most of the reasons were around the concern that you'll end up in a situation where you don't have the mitzvah of tzitzis, and you just have the isser of shatnez. So what you're saying is we could easily find ourselves in a situation like this, that if we're talking about carrying for the sake of a mitzvah of lulav, we could talk about it. But it's very possible you'll end up without the mitzvah of lulav and just with the mitzvah, with the problem of carrying. So maybe that's something we should be talking about. So that's interesting that that's not the discussion as far as we see it. Jed, you have
Another question I was thinking, why would it be just focused on the Havara and not on the Hotzah that we have?
Ah, right. So that's a big question. And as you probably saw, Rishonim talk about it all over. Right? The Tosfos in each one of the three major places where this comes up, Tosfos asks this question. By the way, it comes up more than these three times, but these are the three most well-known instances. Megillah, as we'll see, is a little bit of a different kind of makeup because Megillah itself is a Din Derabanan, although maybe it's considered to be on a higher level because Divrei Kabbalah, because it's from Suvim. But it's less subject to this whole dynamic of a mitzvah and a Torah being outweighed. But in any event, in every place where this comes up, Tosfos asks this question. Why should we talk about Havaras Dal Ramas Rishus HaRabim? Why don't we talk about Hotzah? Right? Maybe Hotzah comes to mind first. You have to take it out of your house. Presumably you're not standing in the middle of the street when you have this issue. If you were, you'd have other issues. You'd have other considerations. If you're talking about being Yotzei, the mitzvah of Lulav, when you're out in the middle of the street, you're not only going to have a challenge because you might take it to someone else to ask a question. How did you get in the middle of the street in the first place with the lulav? And where are you going from here? You'd have all kinds of other issues. So it's interesting that the Gemara is focusing on that and not on what seems to be a much more apparent concern that you could commit hotzah. You're more likely to take the lulav from the inside to the outside. So this is an issue. Tosfos here talks about, Rashi touches upon it. Rashi sounds like it's not such a question, although the answer you have to figure out. But Rashi says, "Who adin dematzim emer v'yotzi mershus yachla mershus harabim." Elish rov makomus v'nyanim amrinan yesh lachos havaras arba amos v'ein lachos lotzah konim hayimuna for karmelus for karpa for bikina d'enkin esrotzah derais. Okay, so there are situations maybe where it's not going to be actual hotzah, so it's more common to be havara. We could have said either one. That's how Rashi says. Tosfos discusses it in a number of places, but in any event, so this is an issue certainly the Rishonim were bothered by. Why is the focus on Havara rather than Hotzah? What other questions might you ask about this whole issue, about this whole concept? Yes?
Why are everyone willing to be Mevatel and Mitzvah to say for all Klai Yisrael for specific cases where somebody might be over allowed?
Okay, so that is a fair question, right? What exactly is the math here? And we know, we discussed a little bit when we were talking about the nature of gezeros. So we saw that Chazal did not make gezeros lightly. And we saw Ein Gozrin Gezerah LeGezerah, that they don't make a gezerah when it's something which is not a big threat. So here, we have the combination of two things. One, there's a big cost to this gezeirah, a mitzvah d'oraisa that is being taken off the table. And is the threat significant enough? How likely is it that one is going to commit mitzvah d'oraisa under these circumstances? So that's something that we definitely have to keep in mind. What exactly is the math that justifies such a drastic decision, making a major step in Klal Yisrael in order to affect this? Now, it's interesting, you saw the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah? Okay, so this again, hopefully you'll see these things tomorrow. It's interesting that the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah has a discussion that maybe we should say that there is a allusion to this idea in the Torah itself, which is something we're going to have to figure out, because if we're assuming we're talking about rabbinic law, so how could it be that the Torah is going to already contain this point? But in the context of shofar, there is a phrase which may indicate this is what we're talking about. What phrase is that? No? Zichron Trua. And the Gemara says, why does the Torah talk about not just the Trua, but the remembrance of the Trua? And one suggestion in the Gemara is that that's a reference to Rosh Hashanah Shechalios B'Shabbos, when we don't have actual shofar blowing, but we have the remembrance of the shofar blowing. So we'll have to figure out exactly how that statement in the Gemara plays in here. But it's on the surface a question, because why would the pasuk be referencing a din d'rabbanan? Now, it's an interesting question. How far back does this din d'rabbanan go? And in the Sefer Divrei Menachem, it's the Tshuvos of Rav Menachem Kasher, who is the author, the editor of the Torah Shlema, if you're familiar with that Sefer, and many other things. So Rav Kasher has in his Tshuvos, Divrei Menachem, he quotes from one of the Rishonim, the Balas Techel Tov, that has a statement, and we're going to quote from this Tshuva of Rav Kasher more tomorrow, but just introducing him here, that this Gezeira goes back to the Anshei Knesset HaGadol, a very old Gezeira. And he goes on to say that he doesn't know where that comes from. It doesn't say in the Gemara that it's Anshei Knesset HaGadol. But then he goes on to bring some support that maybe you could figure out that it was clearly around from a very long time based on various things that it does say in the Gemara. So that's something that we also have to consider, just how far back is this Gezeira, and what are the implications of that? What type of a statement does that make that this goes back so far? This was always a concern. I'll give you a few more makaros tomorrow to see about where that goes. What other questions come up from this whole discussion? You got Shai?
How long this lack of knowledge would last for, in terms of people learn about it, especially in contrast to the fact we have other areas of halacha that change depending on society's knowledge.
So which lack of knowledge are you referring to?
What?
Which lack of knowledge are you referring to?
Lack of knowledge of how to use. It's a little bit unclear also, we're talking about this, but what the problem is, if it's, I don't know if it's actually a difference, but if it's a problem really lies in the person's lack of knowledge of how to use a lula, or his lack of knowledge about Hilchos Shabbos. I don't know what the difference necessarily would be.
Right, so that's itself a question whether it matters. But since we're talking on an individual level, it's unclear whether it should matter so much. But then any individual could be unclear about anything. But the question of just to what extent do we worry that people won't know what to do, when do we worry about that, when do we not worry about that, that's also a question. We see the Gemara, you'll also see, if you see all the Gemara also invokes Kviya Diarcha, when do we know about the calendar, and to what extent does knowing exactly when Yontif is and when it isn't, when is it a Chiyuv Daraisa, when is it not a Chiyuv Daraisa? Because knowing exactly what day actually is Yontif is going to affect the math here also. That's also something that we'll have to end up discussing. So what other questions do you find that are coming up? Yes, sir.
I was wondering, why is shofar and lula grouped in the same category? Mm-hmm. Lula, it seems like everyone has one, but okay. Shofar, it kind of just seems like, at least nowadays, one person who's knowledgeable.
Okay, so that's an interesting question, especially if the Gemara is making a contrast between Arava and Lulav, and saying that we have to be more concerned when the masses are involved. So here it seems that there's probably an issue just in terms of translating theory to practice. That in practice we have one person blowing shofar, and also when it comes to Megillah we have one person reading the Megillah. But strictly speaking, they are individual obligations. So everyone has to worry about how they're going to deal with shofar, and everyone has to worry about how they're going to deal with Megillah. So even though, practically speaking, when everything happens the way it's supposed to, when everyone's in shul and everyone's able to address things in a communal setting, so they don't actually have to do it themselves, but it is a concern everyone's going to have, so theoretically you could find somebody who, as it happens, often somebody doesn't make it to shul, and then they are trying to figure out how they're going to fulfill shofar. So even though nowadays in our structure, most people don't have to worry about shul for an individual level, they have to worry about getting to shul, they don't have to worry about providing the tekiyas on their own individual level, but theoretically they do, and maybe even actually, and therefore it's more in the lulav category than in the aravah category. Okay, any other questions we want to get on the table before we run out of time today, and then tomorrow we will try to address as many of them as possible and hopefully get some kind of clarity in this whole discussion.
You alluded to it in terms of the simplicity of the mitzvah, of why this would be such a concern, but there are a number of facets of that question. One would also be in terms of when we apply this mitzvah specifically, or this prohibition, at one point only applied from day one and on. If they had already done it on day one, then why would they have to
Talk about
it on day two?
Right, how do things all now again, if the lulav issues come up, if that's what the Gemara had mentioned, the lulav could have gotten hassled in some way, then that would be a kind of question that would come up later, but it's interesting that you don't find Chazal pointing to that. So I will throw two more questions out there just to make sure we're confused enough, to make sure we have enough issues troubling us, to make sure you don't sleep tonight. And then tomorrow let's try to bring them all together. But two other things that are bothered by, that bother the Rishonim, bother the Achronim, we'll ask them broadly. They have all kinds of details, but two kinds of areas to think about is, why do we find the Gzeirah by some mitzvos and not by other mitzvos? So many Rishonim, I'll give you some to look at tomorrow, are concerned about why is this not brought up by Bris Milah. Right, we talked about it a little bit in Parshas here a week and a half ago. Right, that Bris Milah applies on Shabbos by Torah law. We understand that, but why don't we say by rabbinic law it shouldn't? It should be in the same category as shofar and lulav, and we should not do a Bris Milah on Shabbos. That's a major topic that Rishonim talk about. And another issue, which you find in the Rishonim and Achronim as well, is just how bad would it be if you did this? Let's say you did take a lulav outside. Let's say you did take a shofar outside. So we have a concept called tov dvar mitzvah. Somebody is pursuing a mitzvah and makes a mistake, makes an error. So under what circumstances does that exempt him, excuse him from the consequences of that error? And what impact does that have here? What impact does that whole concept have here? And there's also a question which was brought up in some of the bechinas yesterday. Is there a role here for asei do chalos asei? Is there a role here to say that, well, even if there is a los asei, but what about the pursuit of the mitzvah? Don't we have a value that's placed on the pursuit of the mitzvah that should give us a little more breathing room as far as this is concerned? And with all that, so we have to try to figure out just how all of these parts come together in order to understand. I'll maybe put a third thing out there, just even practically, but also it affects the concept. Should this change for somebody who lives in an area with an Erev? Should it change if Rosh Hashanah Rabbim is not a practical concern anymore for any reason? Do these things ever change based on a cheshbonus like that? So all of those, let's keep in mind, and just to review the ones that were brought up that are particularly relevant, so we have to figure out just what are we concerned about? Are we concerned about the mitzvah or something ancillary? To what extent are there variabilities based on who's involved, who's not involved? What's the math here when we know that Chazal were not so quick to make gezeiras, and here the gezeira comes at the cost of major mitzvos? What exactly is the consideration? How old is this gezeira? Why does it not apply to certain things such as Bris Milah? And how likely is the concern, especially when there should be mitigating factors in halacha, whether Esed Dochalos say has a role here or not, or Tav Dvar Mitzvah, or something like that. So it does seem the whole issue becomes very, very narrow, that we're worried about something which is unlikely, which, even if it happened, would seem to be defensible on some level, and the cost is the abandonment of major mitzvah. It's one of the points that the Seichel Tov notes, is that, especially when it comes to shofar, where Chazal tell us that every year that we don't blow shofar at the beginning, it doesn't work out good for us by the end. So how can we sacrifice the mitzvah of shofar? We need it. We need it for our well-being. So here the Sefer Tov writes that that's only true. He asked the question, says it's only true when it's because of laziness or because of neglect, but when it's like this because there is Xeri Rabbanan, so then that's a different story, but it's something that's interesting to keep in mind, and we'll try to bring some perspective to all of this, God willing, tomorrow. So again, tomorrow expect more Marmar Komus, a lot more to look at. We'll see how much we can get through. I wish everyone a wonderful day.
It should be only good things.